Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Podcast One presents The Doctor and Mrs. Guinea Pig Show with Heather and Terry Dubrow. Does it work or is it a crock? No worries. Doctor and Mrs. Guinea Pig are on the case.
Please welcome Dr. Jen Berman.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
You look great.
To be here. You too, as always.
You too.
What about me?
You look good.
Looking good.
Yeah, actually, you look cute. He was on Kelly Clarkson today.
He was?
Yes.
What did he talk about?
A botched season 6B.
Really? Oh, wow.
By the way, Jen, what else does he talk about?
I know, right?
He talked about erections and sex last time I was here.
Yeah.
He was pretty fluent.
Yeah, he's good about that.
All those topics.
So, you know, we were just talking about, which I'd like to dive in, and then we're going to have a coronavirus talk because producer Anna's very, very corona nervous.
She is.
Yeah. Aww. But first, we're going to start with anxiety because, and which also has to do with coronavirus, but, you know, I grew up with an anxiety issue, and I didn't do anything about anxiety till a long, long time later. But what I'd really like to talk about is anxiety and medications in younger women.
That the risks of them, or the
like what you would
the
use
the usefulness,
because I'm seeing like a lot of the teen, because you know my oldest two are teenagers, and I'm seeing a lot in the friend groups and everything and what they talk about, and it sounds like there's anxiety issues going on and people are talking about medications and whatnot, and I just wanted to know, is that because my first instinct is like, oh, you can't, that's too young, but then I don't know, I probably would have benefited big time from that.
You remember there was this where we were over-diagnosing where everybody was ADD. And so I think the issues with mood disorders, and I've come, you know, as I've gotten older and as I've, as a woman and a woman with a daughter and, you know, dealing with patients, that there are definitely situations where people have chemical imbalances that need to be and should be medically treated. That said, in terms of teenagers, issues with mood, and be it depression, be it anxiety, be it apathy, be it, you know, anger, that managing emotions and being able to sit with feelings and being able to learn how to be uncomfortable is something that, you know, that we're deficient in some ways.
So it's kind of part of the growing process?
Well, we're wanting this quick fix or that. I don't feel right, so I'm going to take a pill. I feel anxious. And with social media and the, you know, the playing field not being level, and it's all about comparisons. I'm comparing you to me, and I have less than you. You have more than me, or you're prettier than me, or you're in that chuga. You know, that's what that creates. I have anxiety just talking about it. So it's natural that they have anxiety, and I don't think that the go-to is necessarily medication. And, you know, I'm a doctor and I treat medically and surgically. And this is sort of, I've come to learn that the brain has an incredible power to both heal and create disease and discomfort. And if we need to develop tools, every single human being at an early age, about managing stress, coping with emotions, and I think we do have the power. It doesn't come naturally, it doesn't come easily. It requires tools, therapy, support, guidance. It's harder than taking a pill, but we can overcome, you know, and rewire and reframe and change our brains. We can change our personalities. We can change, you know, the book that I was just telling you about, Dr. Amen. There's a doctor that writes about change, you know, change your brain, change your life. You can, what's his name, the guy, I'm totally, my menopausal brain is lapsing on his name, that that your thoughts can affect your DNA, which then affects the proteins that your genes make. So we have an incredible power to influence how we feel. We don't recognize that. And children in particular, I work with my daughter. She would be like, this one and this one said that one. And I try to, when I can, to reframe the situation for her and look at it this way. Well, what about that way? So I don't think the go-to, especially in younger, you know, younger kids, should be knee-jerk medications. That said, you know, the risk of suicide and depression is really high in teenagers now too, so it can't be taken lightly.
That was a lot of food for thought, and I agree with all that, because I think like I'm using me as the example. So me, I always had anxiety. I mean, very young age. I was one of those very classic kids that had the stomach ache every morning and all of that. But there were no other tools. So I wasn't given the gift of fitness and, you know, those kinds of things where I could have like expended energy and felt better that way. But let's say someone's been given that tool. They've been in therapy. They've done this. What I worry about is, okay, so when I started becoming perimenopausal, and you'll remember this, my OBGYN wanted to put me on low-dose antidepressants. And I said, and I told you, and you were like, no, A, B, and you had a lot of reasons why. So going back to these teenagers, what always worries me is, especially because I was infertile, like, what are the side effects of these things? And if someone does need medication, like they've tried all the tools, they're there, and we go, okay, like this child really is ADD, or this child really is has anxiety and needs to go on something. What are the long-term effects of those?
Well, it depends. You know, the classic anxiolytics, the benzodiazepines, are habit-forming.
Like
Valium. Yeah, like, are habit-forming. And there's you build up tolerance to them. They're numbing. You know, even – and all of the – not just the anxiolytics, but the SSRIs, all of them can sort of give you a altered sense of numbness that isn't necessarily – low anxiety, high anxiety, you're just flat. And the thing about what we were talking about with slapping women with Prozac Paxil, because women complain about moodiness, irritability, short fuse, we become more irritable and short fuse, or weepy and depressed, or emotional roller coasters, and not to mention hot flashes. And SSRIs are effective at treating hot flashes, that at low doses, not in therapy. But the people were also treating the mood issues with related to perimenopause and menopause with SSRIs, which I feel is not following, you know, the standard of care, because the mood issues are related to fluctuations in hormones. And if you're giving somebody an SSRI to balance, you know, to flatten them, then you're also causing other side effects, like low libido is a frequent side effect of SSRIs, orgasmic disorder is a frequent side effect of SSRIs. You can't just stop them. You can't, you know, there's serotonin withdrawal issues. Some women, there's a rare unusual sexual arousal disorder called persistent sexual arousal syndrome, which is a debilitating, it sounds like it might be fun to have persistent sexual arousal, but these women, much more frequent in men, in fact, I have never seen a male case, but apparently they exist, where women are in a constant state of sexual arousal to where it becomes uncomfortable, painful, disturbing, and...
sounds like male adolescence.
If that's what guys feel.
Teenage boys.
Seriously.
Yeah. Do you remember the first time you took testosterone? The first time I took testosterone and it hit me, I thought, oh my God, is this what guys feel like? It was terrible,
yeah.
Actually. I couldn't, like, I was constantly like,
yeah.
And like feeling like, ew.
It had the opposite effect for me.
Really?
Turned me off.
It
had to go
did
off of it.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was terrible. I actually had for a moment empathy for the male race.
Yeah.
For that window of it didn't last.
For a moment.
Oh, it's disabling.
I don't know how they.
Really?
Yeah, when you're a kid, I mean, you have a sexual thought every 2 seconds.
And you're all a itchy boy. Down there and things that.
I
like...
mean, it's just like you were studying and then sexual thoughts, studying and riding your bike, sexual thoughts. It's like, stop this already.
How can they function
help
in
it.
The world?
It's really hard.
And I thought, as men, like even like 20 year olds, not just in puberty and everything, I thought, how do 20 year olds, how do they carry on conversations with us without us knowing that that's going on in their heads? Because I felt like I was, everybody knows that I'm like this horny freak.
Yeah, you learn to, you learn to channel it into things that will impress them.
Really?
Like being a doctor.
The same thing is, you know, yeah, if I'm a doctor, then she'll like me. I'll have sex. If I lose more body fat, then she'll like me. If I run more, you know, it's just all about that.
Who teaches you that?
No. It's not a teaching thing. It's a biology. Oh, who teaches you how to channel it?
Yeah.
You're doing whatever you can to impress girls. That's it. So you figure out on your own what a girls
like
find.
Athletes, girls like smart guys, girls like guys with
funny,
money.
But how
funny.
Do you get the? How do you not do just to act stoic and not show that like
you're
horny.
A horn dog?
Yeah.
It's a game you're playing.
And then does it go away if you like have sex or masturbate or
something? For about 10 seconds. 10 seconds.
10 seconds?
That's it, yeah.
Like you have sex and then you automatically want to have sex again?
Yeah, some guys are worse than others and you know who they are, you know, when you meet them. I mean, when they're kids and when they're young adults. But
I remember that. I remember this guy. I'm not going to say his name. Matt. I won't say his last name, though, which I know. But I remember sitting in Spanish class, and I remember this other guy being like, Matt, get your hand out of your pants. Like, he was, like, literally sitting in class in, like, eighth grade with his hand in his pants.
That would be me. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, if you're good at it, you learn how to play so many games with it that you actually don't even realize that you're channeling it into these activities because you get so lost in the activity and the importance of doing it, you forget about what the end game is, which is to have sex with girls.
How old is your son?
He's 21.
Was he like this?
Oh, so he's in the throes of it, probably.
He's gay.
Oh, right, that's so good. Right. That's easier. Well, although maybe he feels that, but that doesn't necessarily mean, maybe he's...
No, I think he's equally as bad, but just, you know, a different orientation.
And it's easier.
Guys with guys,
because they're both feeling that way.
Yeah. Oh yeah, must be the greatest thing to be gay as a guy.
But they're very. Yeah.
I could see that.
I mean, and the other thing is that he says he goes to Tulane, and he said that he has instant, you know, because he has a lot of girl friends, and he's always surrounded by girls, and so every fraternity party, he's always got his harem of women. It's built being gay and being surrounded by women because he relates. He's always, since he was a kid, related really well and had lots of women friends. That's been his key to social circles.
Well, he's also not threatening to the women because they know the end game isn't to have sex with them.
Right.
So he's just fun.
Yeah, and they confide in him. He has a perspective, you know, a non-threatening perspective, but also testosterone. He gives them advice about men and boys. So, but my daughter, on the other hand, is, you know, she's in the throes of
how old is she?
She's 17.
Right. Oh.
And hey, I know.
Well, ours are, you know, the twins are 16, so we're there.
And I see the little horny, gross, gnarly teat boys lurking around.
Oh, yeah.
I can see them on my nest coming in, and I say, get.
Yeah, yeah. You know what they want. That's all they're thinking about. Our kids are a little lower level of that kind of sexual energy.
Yeah, they don't really have it like that.
Really?
Yeah.
And they're friends either.
Yeah. Wonder where they'd rather have pizza sometimes.
Yeah.
Than sex, because pizza is kind of sexual.
Yeah, but the boys want that, so they...
I don't know. Even Nikki's friends that come by, I don't get that vibe from them.
Yeah,
really?
It's weird. They don't seem as sexually crazed as my friends were.
They beat it
maybe,
out of
or maybe they're just really good at hiding it because they go to
because
Catholic
they
school.
they're that repressed, you're saying?
Well, they've learned how to fake it better.
This is Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig.
LaCroix sparkling water was developed to give health-conscious consumers refreshment, flavor, and sparkle with an innocent twist of zero calories, zero sweeteners, and zero sodium. LaCroix's 25 flavors are confirmed to be derived from natural sources with natural fruit essences. Distinct packaging, robust aroma. By the way, best part, zero calories, zero sweeteners, zero sodium. That is innocent. There are 15 LaCroix flavors. The newest one is hibiscus. They have peach, pear, coconut. My favorite's lemon. There's lime, berry, cranberry, raspberry, orange, and grapefruit and pure, which is unflavored. There's also 6 LaCroix Curité flavors, which are like the fancy blends, plus the Nicola line, which is really out there to replace cola for you. LaCroix sparkling waters and LaCroix Curité sparkling waters are gluten-free, vegan, kosher, and non-GMO, Whole30 approved, and environmentally friendly. LaCroix cans are perpetually sustainable and recyclable. Enjoy LaCroix sparkling water, a calorie, sweetener, and sodium innocent beverage with nothing artificial. LaCroix is a healthy alternative for you and your lifestyle, and it's available nationwide. For a full list of retailers, visit www.lacroixwater.com. For more information, join the LaCroix community on social at LaCroix Water, that's LaCroix Water, or check them out at www.lacroixwater.com.
Now, back to Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig with Terry and Heather Dubrow.
So that brings up the topic about talking about sex and talking about it with our girls, talking about it with our children. It's taken me a long time to get my daughter to open up about sexuality. She held it in a lot. I know that she lost her virginity when she was 16 to a boy named Tristan. Little asshole.
Whoa.
Whoa, we're outing the guy.
I mean, who's named that? And is, you know, it sounds like a
movie star.
Fabio.
Yeah.
No, I don't know if that's his name, but I think for her that it was not a traumatic experience, which was my biggest concern.
Yeah.
That she felt, you know, respected, and that you know, doesn't have shame, remorse, regret. She didn't have a relationship with this boy ultimately, or end up, you know, dating him. Definitely, you know, not going to marry him, obviously. But she made a choice, and she practices safe sex principles. And she
did she want to get it over with? Because I hear, like, some of the teenagers, the girls especially, talking about, like, it's a thing to get the virginity over with, so it's not a conversation anymore.
I think it's more important for a guy, don't you?
Well, it's different.
Because it's embarrassing.
I think for a guy, they want to be virile, and they want to be like, they're having sex and all that. But I think for these girls, it wasn't like this when I was in school, but for these girls, it seems like, tell me if you've heard this from your daughter's friends, it seems like it's a thing that, because everyone puts so much pressure on it, mm-hmm. that they almost want to get it over with, so it's like not a conversation anymore.
Because then it becomes like this,
precious.
Oh, she's a virgin, or yeah. she isn't, and then there's a level of, a higher level of, within the group and community, responsibility, so she's still a virgin, and who, you know, it becomes, you know, a label. Mm-hmm. Rather than something that you carry with pride, with, like, I remember back in the day, she's not a virgin anymore and all that stuff. So I remember when I was in high school, girls thinking that anal sex was not sex.
Oh, I remember that,
they
too.
Were
really?
Yeah. Virgins. They were still virgins.
Wow.
Not even just anal sex. But I remember we had a friend who did everything but actual intercourse. So they were having oral sex and, you know, everything but actual penis, vagina,
mm-hmm.
you know, penetration.
Yeah.
And I remember she said to us, she was like, I want to look, by the way, there wasn't a judgment, but this is how she felt. She said, I want to look back on this as being innocent. And we were kind of like, well, what's innocent about, like, blowjobs? Like, is that innocent?
There was a president in the United States who felt the same way. Right? I did not have sex with that.
I'm just
that
saying,
one.
I'm not judging or not judging it. I'm just saying, like, you know.
By the way.
It's all kind of sex, isn't it?
And on top of that, I personally feel that oral sex, giving oral sex, is way more intimate.
Yes.
Requires way much more focused attention than just, you know, you can easily have sex, but to give oral sex and act, you know, that's, for me at least, is, I mean, I would have sex before I would have oral sex.
Right.
Give oral sex.
Yes.
Okay, let anyone have oral sex. But giving it was like, I got to really like you. You got to not be gross. And you know.
I'll have sex with you, but if you're gross, no blowjob.
I don't think that's the way they feel now. They have this thing, you ever heard this thing, this rainbow thing, where they each wear different lipstick?
That's old already.
But that just indicates that to them, that act is not necessarily so
intimate. No, I remember the bar mitzvah blowjobs and on the bus. And they
bar mitzvah blowjobs?
Yeah.
That's when it
was that they were all that was starting in at the age of 13, that there was there were beads or something that they would get,
wow.
like medals of honor based on the number of blowjobs.
Had I known that, I would have probably been bar mitzvahed. Big mistake.
You don't even like blowjobs, by the way.
He doesn't.
He's not a blowjob.
Maybe
guy.
You have to learn how to get.
By
no,
the way.
She gets great.
She does.
No, I like her all
would
over
you
me.
Yeah, but
it seems
you tell
disconnected
her it's not
me?
For me. It sounds like she's right. It sounds like I don't know how to get a blowjob.
you give everything great.
You know, I've heard that my new fiance, I got engaged.
By the way, I'm
no kidding. Congratulations!
Right now,
wow.
I didn't start. I was going to ask, but I didn't want to do it. No. Congratulations!
Wow.
It's so exciting.
But he says the same thing, that it's harder for him because he said you have to get out of your head, and this is the first time I've ever heard this, but that. It was when receiving oral sex, he
yeah.
has to be in a, you know,
inebriated.
Easier. I don't know what's going on.
You have to be lost in your thoughts.
Because
otherwise you're going, well, for me, maybe because I'm more clinical about it, I think, this is interesting. I'm here. She's there.
Yeah, that's right.
What's going on? Yeah.
Is that the cat? Was that the dog? Oh, okay, yeah.
Well, you know, you and I are the same way. We're thinking a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
But men do that too. Isn't that funny? And he tends to be, you reminded me of him when you were saying about your belly, your gut. He has, you know, his stomach, his, you know, irritable bowel and migraines. He's like totally like that. And, you know, so in his head a lot, the female version, the male version of whatever it is that goes on with us.
But I get that. I understand what you're saying. You like me on top of you because we're then connected.
Yeah.
And the outside world is kind of gone. So you're so there's so much touching and so much like stimulation.
But he can't be in his head.
Well, now I'd want to reach for my phone and check my email. I've got some free time. No, I'm saying if I'm not fully immersed, it's lack of immersion for me.
By the way, you're never getting a blowjob again. He would reach for his phone.
I'm kidding. Although, remember the cat? Remember that one time?
That we were cuddling. That wasn't sex.
Oh, right. I had a very, very close relationship with a cat.
Yes.
That I had rescued. He was like 14.
We were dating.
He had renal failure and he was blind. But anyway, I loved him. And so there was this one time we're lying, having an intimate moment.
We weren't. We were cuddling.
It was a burgeoning intimate moment.
And then you were there. Post-coital.
Okay, but anyway, it was not.
He came in.
No, that's not the way I remember it.
We were about to.
Let me tell my story. You can tell your truth.
Okay.
And then you can judge somewhere.
Okay.
So we're having a moment, very intimate, and Heather and I are like, my left hand's around her, and we're having pleasure in whatever, whether it's post-coital or whatever it was very intimate.
Yeah.
And but my right hand, unfortunately, the cat was in my shoulder area, and far away from where Heather was, and I had my right hand stroked the cat.
So all I know,
and really enjoying the duality of it.
It was post-coital cuddling, but he was like stroking my hip or something. He was like touching me. But the way we were lying, there should have been two hands involved, you know, like he should have been cuddling hands. And we were dating, you know, and so, and I go, where's your other hand? And he was like, and all of a sudden I heard.
It was hilarious. Kind of perfection.
Purring. It was funny. We laughed.
It was perfection.
Aww.
It was perfect.
Yes.
Perfect. That's hilarious. And then you remember the cat moment.
Oh.
That was before cell phones. Or was it? No.
Yeah.
It was before smartphones.
Cell phones were in cars only.
No, we had cell phones. We didn't have smartphones.
Yeah.
You
only used them to make a phone call. We didn't even text back then.
So did you guys move in together?
Not yet. We're moving together. We're moving in July.
Oh boy!
Did you plan a wedding?
Not this summer, but the next summer.
So
I know a lot of change. Blending families.
But your daughter will be out of the house. But isn't she a junior?
She's a junior now, so she'll still be there for a year.
Right.
And he has a 13-year-old boy.
So you're going to experience that for a little bit of time.
I'm going to experience.
How do you propose?
We were in New York, in Manhattan, and he...
Where? Set the stage.
And, well, we were going to dinner at Elio's. It's an Italian restaurant on the Upper East Side. And he said to me, let's go by. I want to see where you live. Because I grew up in New York and on the Upper East Side between 91st and 92nd Park. And he said, I want to see your old building. And I said, why? That's so weird. I haven't been back there. So I went back, and when I left New York, I was 14, and I never went back to that building. And a lot of my
former, it's way uptown. You probably wouldn't have a reason to go unless you were going there.
That's
specifically.
That's true. On Park Avenue, I went to Dalton, and so we go there, and I saw the building, and I just got like, whoa! It was like this really weird going back in time. We went in, and it changed, but it also looked the same. And I the doormen were there, and we walked around the back. It was on the west side. There was an east and a west side, and the elevator used to be like a, you know, the kind that you had to open up with the guy in it.
The old fashioned, they would pick through the floor.
And I got like this really weird, you know, both my parents passed, my mom in 2010, my dad just this summer, and I got this really weird, it was like not like this happy, it was a weird, bittersweet kind of like, I'm getting old, time is passing kind of feeling. And
not what he was looking for.
He saw that on me. And then we go outside, and I was saying, and I saw a pharmacy where I used to stop on the way home from school to get candy, and I'd always get in trouble because I'd charge the can. My mom would get mad every day. And there he proposed, and he did it in a really sweet, beautiful way. And then we went to dinner at Elio's, and he invited one of my really close friends from medical school to come that I hadn't seen in a long time, which is really sweet. And that was a surprise, and celebrate with us. And yeah.
Wow.
And it wasn't, you know, I wasn't like, you know, jumping up and down like, yeah. It was sort of like the way our whole relationship has been. Really comfortable, really easy. You know, there's highs and there's lows, but not that. Do you remember like when it's right with it?
Yeah.
It's no, you no longer have that pit in your stomach kind of feeling, ups and downs. Like, so it just, it was so comfortable. It was familiar. It was, when I met him, it was like somebody I'd known forever. Hmm. And that was just, yeah. So.
By the way, have you seen this TV show, Love is Blind?
Yes.
Are you obsessed? We haven't watched the last episode, so don't.
We've watched a quarter of the last episode.
Yeah, it's an amazing social experiment.
It's unbelievably
well
done.
So I love it that men watch it, and I'm curious what men like about it. I know what women like about it.
What do you like about it?
Well, what I, as a woman, I see the, you know, the love me for who I am, that, you know, that it's pure connection without necessarily what I look like, without, you know, that you're loving me for my soul. People are connecting energetically through walls. And what I thought was cool is that you know, they sort of paired off like energies with like energies. And it really, for me, I just gone to the Oprah thing.
Oh, how was it?
It was amazing.
I bet.
So when I was watching the last show, I was like Oprah brain at that point. I was like, oh, they're connecting energetically and they're seeing each other without seeing each other, and how beautiful that is. And then the proposal and the tears and the running into each other's arms. It's the fairy tale that we see. For men, I asked, because my fiance loves it too. And I said, what do you like about it? He said, the craziness of it, and also seeing how the way women think. And, you know, you don't get to really see the way that they're measuring and feeling and sharing and talking about in a real way like that. So he said it's sort of like a fly on the wall into the girl's brain, and just the preposterous nature of the concept. Why do you like it?
Yeah.
At first, I don't like the concept. I thought it was ridiculously contrived and stupid and artificial. But I heard it was so good, so I started to watch it. And then once I watched it, it still remained ridiculously contrived and stupid, but I was so amazed at how authentic parts of it actually were, and how it really did have scenes and experiences within it that really were of the human experience that people in long-term relationships do have. So some of the scenes were so stupid and dumb, but others were like, wow, that was incredibly deep. So it was a weird biopsy of real relationships and of stupid dating shows at the same time. And then I was fascinated by, they made these connections based on personality and past experiences without seeing each other. And then for a guy, how do you, for me, for the way I think as a male, I don't care what my connection is to you. Once I see you, if I'm not attracted to you, I can never get past the wall of Platonia, if I may say so. You know, the platonic.
Yeah.
I can't get past that. I've never.
Because men are visual.
But I can adore a woman, and if I'm not attracted to her, I will never be attracted to her, period, end of story.
Well, these were not – it was interesting because these were – none of them were hideous or unattractive.
No, there was no real unattractive
people. But like I – for me, there was only one really attractive person, and that was that guy, Barnett.
Mark.
Barnett.
Yeah, and I didn't find
One really attractive
Yeah,
guy?
And otherwise, even the girls, except for – oh, she was a cutie. What's her name? G?
Which one was that?
Gigi.
The blonde.
Blonde
the
one.
Cute blonde.
There were two. Oh, the kind of heavy set one?
Yes.
Not the crazier one.
The voluptuous one.
Yeah, the voluptuous one.
Yeah, she was the only cute one. The others were like, you know, bar cute.
Yeah, but then if you were to fall in love with them, you would think that they were, might think that they were more attractive.
Well, here's the
I can
thing.
Erase. See, I can erase all of that falling in love instantly with a look. I look at you and go, yeah, no. And by the way, that's exactly what happened to one of the couples. They fell in love, and the girl couldn't get past her lack of attraction for
him. To him? On the show? I haven't seen that yet. Did that happen?
No, no. Do you remember there's the one shorter guy?
Yeah.
And the other girl?
How many episodes have you watched?
I've watched it to where, I don't know which one I'm on, but they're all, they haven't gone away on their...
Oh.
They haven't
seen each other yet.
No, they're starting to see each other. They're all, they're running, they're getting engaged.
All right, don't give it away. Separate.
No, 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 but I'm just saying.
One of them was grossed out by the way they looked.
Couldn't get past the way he looked, even though he's cute.
She kept blaming it on other things.
Was it the little one, the one that's younger? He's younger.
She couldn't get past it, but I'm not going to tell you anymore.
That's so sad. She already rejected him.
No, she doesn't reject him. It goes so crazy.
It changes.
No, she rejected him in the room for Barnett, remember? First, she's like,
that's right.
And then he's like, all right, well, I'll take you back now. And then he takes her.
Because Barnett got rid of her. She doesn't get over
right.
that.
Barnett went with the other one. Yeah. He's really cute. Does she turn out to be crazy, too?
They're all crazy.
But then they revisit. They mix them up again later and mess them up.
Oh, my God.
It's so well done.
But so here's the thing. So I understand what you're saying, because for men, it's very visual. But I think on purpose, all the girls were attractive. So it may not be exactly your type, but there was no woman in there that was unattractive.
They were attractive, but I can be...
But wait, let me just finish this thought.
Yeah.
Let me just finish this thought. So a lot of people meet now on social media. You meet on Tinder. You meet at, like, not in a bar, right? So you meet on these social dating apps where you know the picture's bullshit, right?
Right.
So it's blind-ish, you know what I'm saying? So you're seeing them. You don't really know how tall they are, maybe, or you don't really know exactly what they look like. There's 12 filters on there. So that would probably help the guys in this scenario, so they had kind of an idea.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I saw a picture of you before we met, remember, in a magazine?
Yeah, you thought you could probably get past it.
And then I met Face you, for and radio. I was like, yeah, no.
Yeah, she wasn't attracted to me, and then I wore her down, but that's the advantage of being a guy. You can pull out your badges of honor,
well,
your
you
little
know, I thought
Boy
you were
Scout
cute,
awards.
You were old.
Oh, yes.
But if you grew to... I mean, he's extremely attractive.
Super handsome.
By the way,
I would submit 100 times more handsome now than when I met you.
That's because you've worked on me.
I have.
Aww. Yes.
But also, you've grown into yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's called the medical degree.
No, you had a medical degree when I met you.
Yeah. But it was funny because one of the guys on Love is Blind, he's not bad looking, but he's a personal trainer, which is nothing wrong with being a personal trainer. But if you take that you take that not bad looking guy and you make him a famous celebrity, he's hot.
Yeah, yeah. Change the clothes, change the hair.
Or you make him wealthy, he's hot.
But now you're going into the whole, like, antithesis of Love is Blind, that if you love the person, then who he is, what he does, how he looks really doesn't matter. And in the big scheme of things, a la Oprah, that really what our truth is not all that other stuff that makes us, you know, sort of, it's who and what we are.
I respectfully slightly
disagree with that. It's a lot of what you guys like in us, I think maybe, well, I'm not telling you how to think, maybe I'm wrong, is based on respect. We cherish you. You respect us. That's the fundamental differences between male and female relationships, I think.
But can I respect
I cherish you
as a teacher who's passionate about, you know, teaching kindergarten students? Or I'm not saying this is me, but I'm playing to a teacher, an artist, you know, a struggling musician versus, you know.
Successful person.
It depends on.
What defines success, though?
Because we were talking about money. That's what I thought you meant. But here's the difference. Yeah. I think it's the confidence factor, because I think it's great that this guy's a personal trainer. It doesn't really matter that that's his job. But he doesn't come off, and he seems like such a great guy, so I'm really not trying to put him down, but what I'm trying to say is he doesn't come off as feel successful to me, meaning
he's not confident enough.
He's not
exactly,
he doesn't
and it's palpable.
Exude like
I
what
will
you're
agree.
Talking about. You're saying if he was a celebrity, she'd be in love with him. I have news for you. If he had the confidence of a celebrity,
he has no game.
I understand what you're saying. That's an automatic hall pass.
If he's an insecure celebrity, he'd still be hot to her.
Right.
Hot, but not.
No, I get that. But what I'm saying is, in his current position, if he had the swagger, it's like what we used to say about, like, when you wear a fur coat, you carry yourself like you're wearing a cloth coat. And if you're wearing a cloth coat, you carry yourself like you're wearing a fur.
That's right.
Okay. So it's kind of the same thing. if he had the swagger, not cocky, I'm just saying the confidence and the swagger of a successful person. Yes, I'm a trainer. I'm a successful trainer. I do this. I know trainers that, yeah. you know, you meet them and they're cute and they have that thing. Yeah, yeah. You could see why
so-and-so,
by the way, yeah. in our community left her husband to go yeah. fool around with that guy because he's got that thing. This guy just doesn't have that.
This is Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig.
Do you remember when you started your small business? It was no small feat, right? It took a lot of late nights, early mornings, and the occasional all-nighter. Bottom line, you've been insanely busy ever since. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed specifically for small business owners. It's simple, intuitive, and keeps you way more organized than a dusty shoebox filled with crumpled receipts. File expenses even quicker and keep them perfectly organized for tax time. Join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks. Try it free for 30 days, no catch, and no credit card required. Go to FreshBooks.com/Heather and enter Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig in the How Did You Hear About Us section to get started. If you like my show, you're going to love the Lady Gang podcast on Podcast One. Join your favorite trio of Hollywood ladies, Kelsey Knight, Becca Tobin, and Jack Vanek, on their weekly raw look of all things pop culture with some amazing guests. Upcoming episodes include pop superstar Shania Twain, Real Housewife NeNe Leakes, and Bachelor Nick Viall. Check out Lady Gang every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Now, back to Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig with Terry and Heather Dubrow.
You know what's interesting? Also, these people in person, every single one of them, are extremely good looking. They're shockingly good looking.
You think?
Well, remember the first time we watched the first season of Survivor?
Yes.
And they were all kind of okay looking. Yeah. And when you saw them in person, they were like...
Very good looking.
Extraordinary. TV makes you, for the most part, it subtracts from your attractiveness. And when you see the people in person... They're much better looking. So in person, they're seeing much better looking people. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I just think the show is weirdly, stupidly brilliant.
It is about fundamental aspects of human nature. That's what we all like seeing. And it's not seeing people doing, you know, like the, what's that, My Strange Addiction, or doing weird, bizarre things, or that HBO Real Sex. It's seeing real people being real and doing things and saying things and being vulnerable that, you know, that we can relate to.
And I don't think it's so crazy, meaning like on The Bachelor, having, you know, 30 girls dating the same guy is not natural, right?
Right.
Now, even though this is a social experiment, let's be honest. You meet someone on vacation, let's say. So you're on a 2-week cruise. You are under that same kind of like seeing you every day. Mm-hmm. We're living in a vacation world. We're having like, and when you're at the beginning of a relationship, you're feeling each other out. That's when you have those dramatic fights, and they're mm-hmm. all around that age where you do those yeah. things. So none of that seems so crazy to me. The fact that there's supposed to be a wedding at the end, that's the crazy twist to the whole thing. But I don't find the dating of it so crazy.
But I'll tell you something, you know, The Bachelor, you watch that knowing they're never going to end up together because they never do.
On The Bachelor?
Yeah. On 24 seasons, what, two people, three people
so you have
married?
Tristan, Ryan, who else?
It's a fraction, a tiny. What's interesting about this show, and there's no spoiler alerts to this because I haven't finished it yet, but I have seen hints mm-hmm. of spoiler alerts online.
Don't tell
it's
me.
A very different
well,
situation.
Well, these are marriage. I think they vetted them. Part of the brilliance of it is they really vetted the people well. These are marriage-minded. I want to be – marriage means something to them. Like, I'm looking at it like marriage, like forcing that. I've been divorced. It's a business arrangement. Like, it doesn't have the same power or message to me as my first marriage did. And this – my fiancé now is very traditional, and it means something to him, and I'm never going to get divorced, and which is great, which is why I agreed. But, it took me a while. There was a point where I was – never going to get married again. And, you know, so I came around. But for these people, for the first time, it really means something to them to be married, to have the ring.
I think you're absolutely right. They cast for exactly those people. Because I'm Bachelor or Bachelorette. These people come and they go, I want to become famous. And I'm hot and I
right,
work out.
Yeah.
And here's my abs. And I don't really
and
care what happens.
And I have a bikini line to promote.
And yeah. But this is different. You're right. The casting is brilliant on this show.
And it's so beautifully shot. Don't you think?
With those pods.
Forget the pods. Oh, wait till later. It's gorgeous. So, it looks like a movie.
So the executive producer of Botch, very good friends, a friend of his is the DP, which is the director of photography of Love is Blind.
Really?
And he, they're going to do, yeah, they're going to do a lot of things that supposedly this season upcoming on Botch they've done. Wait till you see how beautiful it is once they leave the pods. It's unbelievable what they do.
On their vacation?
Yeah, they go on a vacation and they spend time together.
Wow.
Four weeks before the day.
And I saw like trailers for that with them on the boat. One of them's on the boat, and then you saw a little naked butt in part of it. And what happens? Do they have sex, and is there sexual chemistry on all of them? Just can't tell.
That's what, by the way,
that's
a huge part of what happens and evolves, because some do, some don't, and then some don't, and then they do, and it's like, whoa. It's the perfect reality show.
And that's real, too.
Totally.
Because I've had that where you feel like not chemistry, and then suddenly chemistry, or a lot of chemistry, and then not. I mean, that's life. That's real. So the fact that I don't know how they predicted, or they must have an anthropologist or some sort of person consulting, like Esther Perel or Helen, to know. It's like mating in captivity. That how did they know that within 6 days, if you keep them confined, and they probably, this one will go, they probably knew who was going to pair off with who and picked. So, I mean,
Well, they're all drinking too. And by the way, we discovered the mystery of the gold cup.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because I'm doing this show for E.
Did you tell Jan about the gold cup thing?
No. Okay, so what I noticed was they're always drinking out of gold cups.
No matter where they are.
No matter where they are. They're on a boat, they're in the pod, they're in their apartment, they're wherever they are.
Gold chalices, right?
Yeah,
like that kind of vibe.
And they even like joked about it. She was like, oh, Cleopatra, whatever. So I was at E today and we were talking, and my producer goes, it's probably for editing.
Oh, continuity.
So you can't see how high the glass is.
Really?
Because if you were drinking red wine
and it's full.
Because like what I notice is like in the confessionals, Gigi, she's got a zit on her chin. And in some of the confessionals, she has the zit. And in some she doesn't. So I'm always like, I wonder which one was filmed first. So it kind of,
that's,
I mean, not
smart.
That everyone would like notice that, but that's why they do it. It's got to be.
Yeah, I think you're right. Hiding the alcohol.
Yeah, I'm surprised Housewives doesn't do that.
Yeah. Anyway, it's an amazing show.
But does it make you think that, you know, give a different sort of spin on things? And I think that it's supposed to make you think a little bit that what do we value about each other? Like, what is the truth? When they're first connecting, it's about the truth of who that person is. And then when you go into society, you meet parents and you meet siblings and you get that, blah, 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 all that falls away and it becomes about other stuff.
Well, I think that's why it's interesting that they met in those pods first, because it was about making those connections about who you are as a person. I agree with Tara. You have to have a physical attraction. So that's the next step. So I feel like they're going through all the dabdas of dating, if you will, in a very short, but it's just such a short period of time. It's the wedding part that really makes it crazy.
Yeah. But, when I think about it, so let's say your work, because many people meet a significant other or a person they become intimate with at work, right? And why is that? Proximity.
Right.
So you get to spend enough time, you slowly get to know them, and then you start to like them. And the reason it takes so long is because you're initially judging each other on how do you look and all this kind of stuff. They get rid of all that, and they go right fast forward to the compatibility component.
Wouldn't that be nice if you didn't have to, all the fears and all the ego-based thoughts and does she like me, does she not like me, get stripped away and you're actually forced to confront that. I mean, it is interesting. And I just love from the standpoint of, there was a scene, and I think it was with Barnett and one of the girls, where there was just silence. And they were both feeling something, like they were both overwhelmed by a feeling, and there were no words, and they both felt it. And I was like, nee-no, nee-no, nee-no.
Before they saw each other.
They hadn't seen each other.
Yeah.
They were feeling something through the energy was being connected.
Yeah,
without
it's interesting.
Physical. And that is, you know, so on a, that's like the next sci-fi aspect of it is how, how people can connect without necessarily touch, with our senses, which like restrict us supposedly. All our physical senses, which are supposed to expand, limit us in terms of really giving us judgments about things. This is black, this is white, this is salty, this is sweet. And we're sort of filtering rather than...
Can we go back to talking about sex for a second? Because you started this, but we didn't really walk down this road. You said talking to your kids about sex. So when did you start talking to your kids about sex? How old were they?
Well, what happened was, in my case, wasn't what I had planned, in that my son had been taken. What, remember that body exhibit?
So we went to that.
Yeah, that
was a cool exhibit.
Very.
All right. So he went with a nanny when he was maybe nine. Okay. And I didn't know that, but he came home and he asked me, you know, about, I guess he had seen, there were details about eggs and sperms, and they even had an embryo, and they talked about the, you know, he saw the picture of the thing getting big, and he asked me, I know that the sperm comes from the man and the egg of the woman, and then they get together, but how does the sperm and the egg? And I said,
they date,
they rub their stomachs. I said, they rub their stomachs together, and he accepted that. But then I thought, you know, well, I'm going to get the book. Do you remember that book about they had the hippie couples, the hairy guy and the girl with the picture? It was like a picture book. I forget what the title of it was. It was about the man and the man, the woman. They're in the bathtub, and it shows, and they're really like unattractive, like man and woman, it shows the baby. So I got that book, and I guess by the time he was maybe like a year later, we had that conversation, and it was dropped. There was no further discussion about it, and he understood. And
he was like, "Cool, I'm gay, so I don't really need that."
I don't know. I don't think he knew then. But my daughter, who was, you know, she's 3 years younger. The next thing I know is he's got the book and he's reading the book to my daughter, and this is which wasn't what I planned either. But by the way,
did that with Kat.
Worked out, and it was it was an icebreaker, I guess, to a bigger discussion. And I just keep, you know, I'm very open and frank. My whole family is, my sister.
They're growing up with you as a mom. Yeah. They know that you're a urologist and a sexual behavior therapist, you know, specialist. Maybe I said that wrong, but.
No, I talk of sexual health, sexual content, sexually explicit discussions, anatomy, you know.
So I would think they would be like, yeah, that's what my mom does.
And they, you know, they pretty much are very comfortable with that. And I, you know, shaming about, I am so like prickled right now about shaming of body parts and the discussions. I was just realizing on Facebook, you know, you can't say vaginal health. If you're doing anything promoting, like I wanted to say for my office, you know, we're doing sexual health or vaginal, you can't talk about that. Hmm. Like there's still
really?
Like shame. I had a patient today who works at Disney, and I gave her some samples, this new vaginal rejuvenation treatment. I told you the
Glow?
CO2V, which is that.
Yeah, you sent it to me.
Which is amazing. And
Well, you didn't send it to me. You sent me a picture.
I should have brought Heather a box.
And yeah.
So, but she got samples of that and some other thing, and she asked my assistant to staple up her bag. And I said, why are you doing that? She goes, oh, well, you don't know where I work.
Oh, right.
And I said, well, where you work? What? Like, you're not allowed to say vagina or have a vagina?
Oh, no.
There. And she said, well, you know, my assistant might see. And I said, what? Your assistant has a vagina, too.
Right.
It's okay to have vaginal dryness when you're 55. Why is that something? Why is that a problem? Why is that something to have shame? And I said, you're propagating this problem. And she's like, well, you know, no, I just want to keep my job.
She's like, that's great, Jen. You get on your high horse. I'm going to go keep my job.
So that, you know, that really bothers me. And I, you know, another thing happened. This is all, so I was at a party for my friend Sandy Yon, the captain of Below Deck, and we were, it was her birthday party, and there was a political commentator, a woman for our president on the boat, and we were talking about this topic, and I said, you know, I asked her about how would you be able to discuss these things? She goes, I wouldn't mention the word. Mm. And I said, well, what if there was like a chemical oil spill and women were developing vaginal and uterine cancer and you had to discuss that? She said, I would say feminine parts. And I could feel, but they had to separate us. We were on a boat. And my head started spinning around and vomit spewing. It was just, that was so powerful to me. And it makes me angry that women, like, we put so much blame on men that they're this and they're that and they're one, they're me too, whatever. We're responsible too for advocating for ourselves, for setting boundaries, for having body image and self-esteem, for not having shame. Because when we do, that's when we put ourselves in those situations that where we compromise our truth and our integrity. And so I need to figure out how to break that taboo. I have been my whole entire life and career talking about it as a doctor, and they let me get on and they let me say vagina and clitoris, on air. But if we were to be talking about Harvey Weinstein's ambiguous genitalia and his, is he a pseudo hermaphrodite and what does that mean and how would that play out sexually?
That's okay to talk.
Well, maybe you wouldn't want to talk about that, or that, that takes it a little too far. And how did that play into his masochism and his behavior and his treatment of women? And there's so many different layers that we are allowing ourselves to talk about, but not. We can villainize him on the one hand for being this and the other. On the other, there's layers below layers that we don't even know. Not justifying, not minimizing, but perhaps shedding light onto how, a monster becomes a monster.
Yeah. Crazy.
Should we shift gears to coronavirus?
Yeah, by the way.
Yes.
Bing. All right. Producer Anna, who's very nervous about
this. Is she behind?
This.
Is she on it with a mask
She
on?
Needs to know. Hello. She has questions that she needs to know. Anna, you have the corona floor.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been reading everything, and my biggest question is what – I know that I'm relatively low risk because I'm 26 and I'm healthy, but what should I be taking? Are there supplements? Is it just vitamin C? I've been getting a lot of people telling me to take zinc, and I don't know what that does. And is there something that my parents should be taking? They're 70.
No, let me just, for a frame of reference, only 2% of people who get the coronavirus actually die from it.
And actually, maybe far less, because the denominator may be much bigger, right?
Right. So, so the lethal effects of it are not as extreme, except for the people that have compromised immune systems. That would be babies and the elderly. Your parents, 70s and 70s and up, are more vulnerable. But there's nothing that you can really take. Your immune system, you can do a lot of things to impact your immune system in a negative way, which would be stress, diet, pollution, smoking, alcohol, drug, all of the things that impact our general health and microbiome. But having a healthy immune system, healthy diet, is washing your hands, taking normal precautions, not worrying so much. The worry that's going on in your head right now is impacting your immune system and putting you at risk.
Just to put this in perspective, so you said 2% of people that have corona die. What percent of people that get the flu die?
0.01. It's
less than corona?
Oh, way. Well, here's the thing. When you get corona, a lot of people may have very mild symptoms and you're not aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you really only now, right now in this early part of the pandemic, identifying those patients, people who are in an area where you're suspecting corona and you're testing for it, or you're dying. So the fatality rate is the number of deaths over the number of people that have it, right? So when you get the flu, everyone knows you got the flu.
Right.
Right? But when you get corona, it could be super mild, as like a minor cold. You think, oh, I don't have corona, I had a cold. And
why would you even be tested for it?
Why would you be tested for it?
So you're not counted.
So you're not counted. Yeah. So it may actually be much more like influenza. But what's very weird, what do you think about this, Jen? What I find very weird about the coronavirus is, one, kids don't get it, or very, very, very few kids. That's the big medical mystery now as to why kids are not getting coronavirus.
Even in China?
No. Think about it. They're not. You don't hear about kids getting coronavirus.
No, you don't.
That's number one.
That you say that.
And number two is, why, if it's like influenza, why did the doctor who sort of was one of the first people to treat a coronavirus, he was obviously a healthy 45-year-old, nice-looking doctor, die from it? Why did the main hospital administrator die from it? These are healthy people who are not immunocompromised, not older. Why did they die if it's really...
Have you heard these theories that they created the virus?
Yeah, but...
They did, apparently, that it was created... Well, you know about germ warfare is real, but how it got... So, and the timing of it, and when is... You know, who... All of these...
You think it could
but,
be.
But we can really only talk about what we do know.
Okay.
Right? So what do we know? We know that it probably is less fatal than 2%, but... If you look, right now we know, 80% of people will get it, will just have a sort of a mild cold, maybe flu-like symptoms.
And those are the people we know that have been counted for.
Right.
Tested.
And then 14 to 18% will probably get a more severe flu-like syndrome. And then 2% supposedly of those and die. And that's mostly in the elderly, except for... The young doctors who are
That's the hinky part.
Yeah, that's the hinky part.
Supposedly it can mutate quickly was one of the concerns, and that so become more virulent or, in this case,
but
less. And that it – I forget how long it lives on hard surface.
Yeah, that's
think,
a question.
They don't know, but they think it could be as long as 4 days.
Right. So that's
which is a long period of time.
Too, where they were importing and exporting things, and so that makes –
they have to quarantine goods and make sure that those things don't.
But let's face it, just in terms of the question that was originally asked, what should she do or her relatives do? It's really you should focus on not getting it rather than supplements. You should focus on
hygiene.
Those kinds of things that can transfer to you because it's transferred person to person, right? Personal contact.
Right.
And so...
Or someone could be walking by and cough on you.
Yeah, but the big thing is don't touch your face. How do you not touch your face?
It's not a respiratory thing.
Not really, unless it's directly spit into your mouth. But it's,
no, that's not that they thought I just read. They said that because they were talking about where you're safe on an airplane. They were saying they. I'll pull up the article so I don't say they because I hate the truthiness of that. But I thought it was the CDC. But what
six feet, two rows,
rows, and it was said that the people in the window seat are safer. Because if no one's around you affected for two rows, you're fine, except the people that are walking to the bathroom and back. So if they cough or it's, it comes off of them onto, your clothes. That's why they're saying the people at the window seat have a barrier. They have the aisle person in between them.
Right. But if it's on a surface,
yep.
which is where I think most people are probably getting it on surfaces, right? And you touch your mucosal surfaces on your face, your tongue, your nose, your mouth, and so on. That's how you get it, your eyes. So try not to touch your face. And there's all these articles I've been reading recently about why do we spend so much time touching our face? Because you think about it, you're touching your face right now.
I'm leaning on my chin.
So wash your – I think it starts with hand washing, which is something that I've always been obsessed with. But, the sing happy birthday twice or the alphabet A to Z, which is 20 seconds minimum. But make sure you get under the nails and the sort of interstices of the digits and so on and make sure you really, really wash your hands.
You're scrubbing all the time. So
I scrub all the time. Yeah.
I wipe down all the surfaces. Like on an airplane, I've got the wipes out. I do the seatbelt. I do the air vents. I do the window.
But Jen, let me ask you a question right now. Would you take a trip on a plane to New York? Would you avoid that? Let's say it wasn't a super important trip in your life, like you were giving an important talk or you were going to appear on some show where you're going to talk about something important. Would you go to New York right now if you had sort of a light invitation to go restauranting and going to some shows? Would you get on a plane?
I'm not, if I wanted to go, I would probably go. I wouldn't go to Italy. I wouldn't go to China.
Well, but you're not allowed to. There are travel restrictions. No one's
certain
going from here.
Certain parts of Italy, I think.
No, I think it's all of Italy right
really?
Now. Iran, Italy, China, and South Korea. There are the no-go places. Those four. But you'd go to New York?
If I wanted to go to New York, once you put those, for me at least, once I put those thoughts in my head, then then it can be all consuming. I don't think there's enough evidence over here right now that where there's a contagion going on.
I agree.
That we're needing to be quarantined. If I'm not going to go to New York, I might as well quarantine myself in my house and not go to work. I mean, what's the difference?
Wait, but listen, Anna, tell them the story about your niece.
Oh, yeah, my sister works at a high school in New York, and they had to shut down the school down the street because one of the parents had it. And they think now her school, which is near that school, will get shut down. And there weren't even cases there. But
where
in
New York?
There's two locations of the school. I know they're in Manhattan.
And has the one person that they shut down the school, not because there was an epidemic, because one person had it.
Yeah.
But did they confirm that she had it for sure? And what's the status? Is she like fine with mild symptoms?
It's the second confirmed case in New York. He's an older man in his 50s and I guess had a previous respiratory issue, so it's worse for him. But they did shut down that school.
Well, that's what you do. You quarantine until it becomes influenza, if it does, hopefully, you know, just a sort of standardized thing. It's going to be a while before we have a vaccine.
Can I have follow up?
Yes, go ahead. Yeah.
Can you use too much Purell?
Yes,
that's a good question.
You can use too much Purell.
As
you use it, because then what happens is that it breaks, you can have, because it's drying, it can actually cause cracks in your skin, which then can create areas where
fissures, where
bacteria can enter. And in young children, remember they told us to stop over-sanitizing our hands and their hands, because it helps your microbiome is the best protection that you have. So your skin is a barrier in and of itself. So you want to wash, but not necessarily scrub like you're in the OR. He has to do that to try to become sterile, even though you don't really achieve sterility, but, you know, closer than, you know, the naked hand. But our skin is protected. And when we break it down with alcohols and all those other things, you can break the microbiome of the skin.
Yeah.
That's something I did well. Our kids, knock on wood, they rarely get sick.
Yeah.
When they were little, I remember everyone was always constantly getting sick. No, I just really didn't.
Yeah. It's funny because we have to go to Minnesota this week.
Yeah. You're worried?
And no, I'm not.
No, because I've got the window seats.
And by the way, yeah.
But masks don't protect us.
There is a mask apparently that does.
Right.
But Terry was saying, I think it was Terry that was saying that the mask is good for the person that's got the virus.
Yeah.
Because they're the one that's spewing this stuff. If we wear a mask, what does it really matter? Because if someone walks by and coughs and now it's on your sweater for 4 hours and you scratch your arm and then you wipe your eye, guess what? You were just
infected. And also those particles are smaller. It can go through the mask into your mouth.
How long is a mask or surgical mask good for?
Yeah, I think studies have shown like 30 minutes or so before it becomes – it's basically for gross particulate matter more than anything else.
There's different – like the paper kind of ones are, but what about those more like fiber ones?
They may last longer. You know what amazes me? We've talked about this. I'm getting off topic a little bit, but think how ridiculous this is. We go into an operating room, right? You and I and the nurses and the techs and everyone else, and we wear masks and head stuff and all this kind of stuff. Yet we wheel the patient in and don't put a mask on them as if they don't have bacteria and stuff in their mouth that could infect their own wound. Isn't that a weird
it's
thing?
It's our bacteria that we're producing.
No,
that
but
is weird.
It's the weirdest thing. And then, of course, don't you find this weird? You spend 2 to 3 minutes or longer, 5 minutes, scrubbing your hand every surface 10 times. And if you hit something by mistake, you start the whole process over. But then at the very end of that 5 minute scrub, you rinse off with
dirty
tap water.
Yeah.
That's the weirdest thing ever.
Yeah.
As if tap water's good.
By the way, we're all going to die. Do you have one last question on this?
I think I'm okay.
Do you feel better?
Those are my two big ones. Where what to take and can I use?
Don't take anything. Be healthy. Vitamin C. I mean, there's things that you can do, like regular vitamin C and but overdoing it with supplements to stave off coronavirus probably does more harm than good.
I think we need to stop shaking hands. You know what? We have such an issue. I'm sure you do too. But our biggest problem,
hugging.
Problem is hugging. So I was doing a man on the street thing at Universal yesterday and people want to hug me, which is great. So I hugged everyone. And then I left. I was like, wow, I just hugged. I'm now linked to everyone that walked through Universal Studios.
See what the NBA is doing now?
No.
The fist bumping only.
Really?
That's it.
But you're still touching?
No more high-fiving.
What about the basketball that they're all, like, touching?
Well, the fans. And then wiping their eyes. Fans. They're worried about the fans.
Yeah. Oh. But the other thing is, you know, and I'm sure you get this, too, because people recognize you, that, mm-hmm. yeah, and we know people at restaurants and stuff, and they want to come over and say hi, the server, the maitre d',
in the middle of the meal, and they want to shake hands.
You don't want to be rude, but even if it's at the beginning, so we'll get to a restaurant, wash our hands, go to the restroom, wash our hands, sit down, now we're ready to eat, right? And then, like, the manager will come over and something, and they're... Everyone's so nice and they want to touch.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel so rude.
Yeah.
But now I go like, oh, coronavirus, I'm not touching, but I'm going to wait.
How long are we going to do that for?
I would like to, Terry would like to never touch anyone.
Yeah. I'd like to have a touchless society.
Oh my God. We're going to put
but
you
me,
on
I
love
hope.
Is blind.
I enjoy touching you and occasionally myself as well.
And on that note, thank you so much for being
thank
here.
Thank you for having
adore
me.
Adore you.
Always
you're the best. Will
fun.
You come on Heather DuBrow's World soon so we can talk
yes.
about like female things?
Yes, yes, yes.
Perfect.
For sure.
Love you so much. Tell everyone how
love
to find you.
You
and how to find your
you
business.
You can find me on BermanSexualHealth.com and my Instagram is at JenBermanMD. And anytime, anything about sexual health, I've got the answers.
Hormones, anything. And she does mobile things. So you don't have to be in her office. You can Skype her.
Yeah, hot flash house calls, we're calling it.
I love
so cool.
that. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank if you, you have a spare minute, go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, and tell us why you love Dr. Mrs. Guinea Pig. Thank you so much, and we will see you next week.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig with Terry and Heather DuBrow. Download new episodes every week on the Podcast One app, iTunes, or at podcastone.com.